I have a guest today that can sort of relate to the idea of hypocrisy and has made an incredible impression on the literary landscape by observing and capturing ironic human experiences. I want to introduce the acclaimed author, a very wonderful and funny person who often... takes everybody by surprise, Christina Oxenberg. Christina has written several books, and she is a critically acclaimed author, described by Robert Kennedy Jr. as one of the most lethal wits of the Western world. And here she is. Are you there?
I am here.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing extremely, extremely well. I was just starting to introduce you and, was describing you as sort of, Robert Kennedy described you as one of the most lethal wits of the Western world as far as your writing and some of the ironic human nature that you're able to capture in writing about people. And, you've really built your writing career about being candid about some of the hypocrisy involved with being, the daughter of, Princess Elizabeth of Yugoslavia. And, you've also been known to impersonate Gwyneth Paltrow in The Hamptons. And you've experienced sort of, the life and changes that so many creatives have, in writing these books and coming to market and getting great feedback. But then that also includes sort of this whirlpool of, strange and crazy employments from being a researcher or flipping burgers and, moving on and trying your hand at, being a designer. And I just really am happy to hear that you're returning to your passion as a writer. And I would love for, our audience today to get sort of your idea and your journey of when you started with Taxi and, kind of how that career sort of unfolded at that point and some of the things that you've been doing.
Well, thank you, Amanda. I appreciate you wanting to talk to me.
Yeah.
The first thing I'd like to clear up is that my good friend Bobby Kennedy Jr. initially, his quote was that I was the greatest wit in the entire world.
Oh! forgive me.
I preferred that. And then he changed his mind and scratched out entire and just put Western world.
Oh, God damn him.
I said, how could I lose so much territory in 15 seconds? You know, even Napoleon didn't do that.
In the blink of an eye, you lost half of the world.
I lost half the world in no time at all. And so Bobby's reasoning was that he didn't understand Asian humor. So he didn't feel like he was in a position really. Anyway, so yeah, I lost a lot of territory to that, unfortunately.
In our hearts. Yes.
Sorry?
No, I was going to say, in all of your readers' hearts, it includes the entire world. So don't worry.
Thank you. I feel much better already. So Gwyneth, yes, she took a beating, and I apologize to Team Gwyneth, but anybody who had been sitting next to me that day would have been written about. So lucky me, it was her.
what happened? Tell our listeners have absolutely no idea what we're talking about.
I was at a book event where you're seated democratically in according to your last name, so it's alphabetical, and to my left, there was somebody as obscure as myself. She had done a book on baking brownies. But to my right, exactly, which is the average caliber at that event. And on my right was this, glowing, pristine monument of modern American royalty, Gwyneth Paltrow. And how could I resist?
Yes.
Is all I could say.
How could you resist? Was Gwyneth there? I'm surprised she showed up. Was she there for the whole event?
She arrived late and left early, which is exactly what we expect. Yeah. she was, in fact, in fairness to Gwyneth Paltrow, I put a lot of things in my story that were not true. I am a fiction writer.
Yes.
And my aim is always to entertain.
Yes.
So she's kind of dull. I had to exaggerate to make the story. It was just, part of the process.
Yes, of course. You took artistic license, and it completely worked for all of us. So thank you for doing that.
Exactly. So back to Taxi. That was the beginning of it all.
Yeah.
And there's no one on earth more dyslexic than myself. And I encourage all people who are dyslexic to not fear it and plunge ahead anyway with your plans, even if they feel nonsensical, like becoming a writer when you can't spell a word.
Yeah, I would say if jumping in with both feet, even if you have that as an obstacle, that takes some balls.
Well, sure. Yep. So, but it's just a matter of getting used to it. It wasn't until my fifth book that I felt comfortable saying I'm a writer. There's something kind of intimidating about claiming the mantle. So Taxi came and went, and I was 21 at the time, and it was sort of a blur.
Yeah, you were a baby. You thought it all, you just thought everything happened easily when you're 21. You just write a book, and you get it published, and, the world is all good. You have no perspective or anything to compare it to.
Exactly. And then you meet with this crashing, hideous silence afterwards when I had expected a sort of, massive career from that, and it just dribbled out into nothing. And so I got married, basically, like, shake off the shame and fill up my time for about 7 years. And then I met an editor at Simon & Schuster, and we decided to write that I would write Royal Blue, which was my novel that tickled my family pink because it was about my childhood, and they were thrilled about that.
Is it really about your family? I mean, I know enough to know that, like, you didn't name them by name or anything, but is it really?
I would have gladly named them by name, but the legal department of Simon & Schuster,
they wouldn't have any part of that idea. Okay, squashed that, which was probably good.
That was, and again, the deal that I made with Simon & Schuster was they wanted me to write a tell-all about my childhood.
Okay.
And I figured, well, they don't know what my childhood was. I can write whatever I want. How are they going to know? So I did not write a tell-all. I saved lots of good material for the trilogy in case I needed to roll that out.
Means you needed some blackmail material down the road. You didn't want to put it all out there in the world.
You got it. Oh, Amanda, you must have a little bit of Serbian in you.
I do. I must.
Yeah. So I wrote Royal Blue, and my editor left the company. He left Simon & Schuster before my book came out.
Okay.
And I learned about this this horrible thing that can happen to an author. It's called being orphaned.
Orphaned. Okay. And so you were orphaned.
Yeah, which means you just enter obscurity, never to return to the light.
Oh, God. Buried alive.
So all your work, all that effort, all those decisions you made about what to call these people, then everything is gone.
Oh,
it just
God.
All vanished.
Oh, my God.
And that was so overwhelming that I decided I would never write again.
Yeah.
And I went into the fashion business, which I don't even like fashion, but it was a good place to, like, work out my angst and aggression and hatred of the writing industry.
Yeah, had absolutely nothing to do with it. And so I'm sure you were able to completely turn off that part of your brain and, focus on what isn't. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about the fashion industry. Talk about picking a hellacious one to jump into. It was you picked a good one.
Yes, I did. Well, I fell upon some extraordinary fiber, the fuzz of some rare animals that was just so delicious to touch that I became a fanatic immediately. And I went around town with a plastic bag full of this raw fiber, and I forced friends of mine to put their hands in the bag and it'd tell me how soft it was.
And how much they'd pay for it.
And this went on until they, you know, there was an intervention and they said, please stop with the bag. So I was like, all right, I'll get them. I'll make clothes. So I did. I manufactured and wholesaled sweaters and anything you could make out of wool. I didn't knit, obviously. I have tyrant blood, so I don't actually do anything myself. I just crack the whip.
That's right. You're very good at managing others. It's an excellent, excellent predisposition.
Benevolent dictator is probably the best way to put it. And, so I drove that business deep into a hole in the ground because I don't know how to run a business and I don't play well with others and I have no concern, no interest in fashion. It was not a perfect fit. But the fuzz itself, the raw material is incredible. It's way too expensive to ever really make sense. I was selling coats for $6,000. Which puts you kind of out of the market.
Yeah,
the mainstream.
Your market is tiny. You're not able to do